AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Joining us right now is Ola Larsmo. He is the author of Swede Hollow. He's joining us from Sweden as we're going to talk about this book, which features, of course, the locales and people here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, as at the turn of the century. Ola, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you very much.
I should mention you're a columnist for Sweden's largest paper, and you've won quite a few awards. Congratulations. You're a very accomplished writer.
Thank you very much. And it's always nice to get awards because then you know that people actually might read your book.
Well, and it's and the fact that we're talking in Minneapolis and you're over in Sweden, that I think that's a good sign. The rise of fiction that ties into historic fact. There's been quite a few people that have been specializing in this. I think about Caleb Carr when he started one of his books there. How did you get interested in this kind of form where you looked at historical facts and would write a story around those?
Well, I think I sort of stumbled into writing historical fiction in the mid-90s or something like that. And it's really just because you get so curious about how we ended up where we are. And you realize that you're actually part of a much larger story than your own life. And if you're a writer, then you get sort of curious and want to find the whole story.
Mm-hmm. What I find to be interesting about this, I want to get your perspective from Sweden in regards to the immigration story. Because the immigration story from America's point of view, especially with the European settlers, is, they came here, they if you just rolled up your sleeves, worked really hard, you got a chance. But when we talk about, especially here in Minnesota, the Scandinavian story generally is either you became a farmer or you go up to the Iron Range, you work in the mines or you work around the mining up there. It doesn't really, kind of bring up the point which you talk about, which is the people that were working in the cities, that were working the low-paying jobs. What is the perspective from Sweden? How do you guys look at the immigration issue as it came to America at the turn of the century, last century?
Well, I think we have to remind ourselves that there was about 1.3 million people that left Sweden during a period of 50 years or so. And that also, if you think about it, you realize that there must be 1.3 million different stories out there with people ending up in all sorts of places and all sort of positions on the social ladder. And in Sweden, I think we have been focusing very much on the farmers in northern Minnesota because of the novels by the accomplished Swedish writer Ville Moberg. Mm-hmm. They have really sort of formed our perception about immigration to America. And of course, these people existed and they were farmers that sort of they had a good life. They managed to sort of establish a farm. There were farmers that failed. But the historical truth is actually that most Swedish immigrants to the States, they ended up in the cities. It was an urban phenomenon. As you might know, Chicago was the second city of Sweden for a while, more Swedes living there than in Gothenburg. So I would have tended to sort of disregard these stories. And as you know, as a writer, you're always fascinated by the silences in history and the kind of stories that you're not supposed to tell or listen to, because those are always the best stories. And when I visited Minnesota for the first time in 2006, it was my wife who had been an exchange student in Minneapolis. So we went there to visit her friends. Then we sort of just stumbled the story of Swede Hollow. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fascinating story because I had never heard about this aspect of Swedish immigration to the States. This was totally new to me.
And by the way, and one of the things I will say from just my perspective, and I was stationed overseas for 4 years in Germany, so I did do a lot of traveling around Europe. I mean, outside of the Irish, I don't think there is more pride from the native countries of the population in the Americas than Sweden, Norway. They're very proud. I mean, because and you see it here too. I mean, the pride here. And it's nothing against, say, Italians or French. It's just that they're. I think it's because you understand. I mean, the amount of people, the opportunity that the immigration story saved a lot of these people. They didn't starve in the country. They didn't live on the streets or freeze to death. They were able to actually go make a life for themselves. And I think that there's an appreciation which Sweden, Norway, Finland as well, that they have towards that immigration story because it. you know, to a point, not only did it save the culture, but it expanded it.
Well, what you might add is that I think Sweden, Norway, and Ireland were the three countries that actually had the largest percentage of the population leaving for the States. So it's not a mystery that these three countries sort of stand out when it comes to being aware of the role that immigration sort of played in our national history. But I also think that we have got a little bit carried away, not least in Sweden, about the success stories of immigrants.
We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit.
Yeah, there was some kind of interruption there.
Okay.
Somebody's trying to give me a call. I'm sorry.
That's okay. By all means.
Yeah. So if you can just sort of wait until my friend gives up, then I think she's given up by now.
So, but like you said, they romanticize the story. It's like of that, you know, it's the giants of the earth sort of thing. It's like, oh, you can go make it as your own. But the reality is that many European settlers ended up in these large cities working low wage jobs and not being treated very well.
Yes, that's true. And again, we have to remind ourselves that there are all kinds of stories about immigrants. Mm-hmm. A lot of people actually made it and they managed to create better lives for themselves and their children. But I don't think we really can afford to edit the other people out of the picture, the ones that didn't make it, because mm-hmm. their stories are also part of Swedish and American history. So if you want to know the full picture, you have to listen to these people as well. And Sweden Hollow, I think, is a very fascinating place in so many ways. If you have visited the Hollow itself, yeah. You know that it's a kind of strange silence down there. And it's almost like a silence that is bursting with untold stories. Or maybe I just think of it that way because I'm a writer.
Well, no, you're exactly right. I mean, there are places in Minneapolis and in St. Paul where there were full neighborhoods. In Minneapolis, one of the areas is on the riverbank down off of Washington Avenue. There used to be 6 or 7 blocks down there. And of course, they got flooded out every year with the spring floods on the Mississippi River. Eventually, the city said, enough's enough, you're moving out of there. Sweet Hollow, I have been down in there as well. And it's, you know, it tucked away underneath large mansions above it. It is this quiet area, and as you walk through it now, it's very hard to comprehend that this was a lower class, you know, a thriving lot of people neighborhood that was basically, I don't want to say it was the forgotten dregs, but it was definitely, you were on the downside looking up.
Yes, and most of the men, at least down in the Hollow, they worked for the big railroad companies, and that was hard work and it was dangerous work. So if you look into the church records, you will see that a lot of the men actually, well, they died quite young, or they were maimed or hurt badly in railroad accidents. Many of the children died very, very young from diseases that we don't think are that dangerous today. So it was a hard life, but I don't think that we should look down upon these people, which we actually do, as we want to edit them out of our history. They worked hard to make a living, and they did their very, very best to make a new life, and I think we should respect them. Yes, and that's what the novel is about, really, to try to listen to their stories.
I honestly, what you just said there is so wonderful, because you're right. The lower class, not only did you, because life was hard, and I mean, they lived right on the railroad lines there. I mean, it was one of those things, you worked for the trains and you constantly heard the trains. They were always going through. It was a very industrial place, you know, but that tough life not only led immigrants to cling to their culture and keep those traditions here, but also in many wonderful ways create new American versions of traditions, which still today inhabit all the ethnic culture that exists within the United States. I mean, it really is a hard life generally gets, you know, it inspires, it strives, and you also get a level of preservation that happens within that community because life is hard.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there are a lot of stories and traditions that people in Minnesota think are Swedish, but they were actually created in Minnesota, and often by people really hard circumstances. So some of these traditions we wouldn't recognize in Sweden because Swedes in Minnesota invented them. Yeah, and that's sort of the fun side of going digging into this part of history and discover all this stuff. But Sweet Hollow was also fascinating in many other ways because there were not just Swedes living down there. It was also a large Irish community called Connemara Patch. And they have a very distinct history of their own, actually. And finally, there arrived people from Italy and Poland, and finally Mexicans. And we still have to listen to their stories, I think. Since I'm Swedish, I have access to the Swedish aspects of this history, but there are a lot of stories left to tell.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's if you want a book that actually has many modern day applications, it's this book, and the value of immigration absolutely played out within your story. Once again, we're talking with Ola Larsmo. The book is Sweet Hollow. When you write a book like this, you actually, you know, you approach it from two different ways, the historical side as well as also the character side. Let's talk a little bit about the history. How did you research? Because not only does it happen at Sweet Hollow, you talk extensively about that, but you did obviously a lot of research about the experience for Swedes who were coming to America at that time.
There is actually a lot of academic research that has been done here in Sweden about immigration to the States, and I spoke to a lot of historians, and I really tried to find the kind of stories that we hadn't heard that much about. But once I arrived in Minnesota and St. Paul and Minneapolis, I had excellent help from the people at the Minnesota History Society that helped me a lot. And you can find a lot of, I would say, fascinating and unknown stuff if you look into the census records, for instance, or the church archives. There is a sort of first Lutheran church next to Sweet Hollow that used to be the first Swedish Lutheran church. And their church records are absolutely intact. They are in Swedish, though, so not many people can read them anymore. But one of the fascinating aspects of Sweet Hollow that we discovered, actually, when we were doing research at Minnesota History Society, was the fact that the Swedes stayed on there for much longer than has been thought. If you read some newspaper articles and stuff you can find online about Sweet Hollow, it states that most Swedes were up on the streets around 1910. But if you look at the census records, you realize that no, there were lots and lots of Swedes. I would say the majority of the population were Swedish well into the 1920s. And to know exactly when they left, then you would have to go back to Minnesota History Society and do more research because nobody has been looking into this. But I think it's realistic to say that people they lived out their lives in Sweet Hollow, and I would say that some families probably were there for at least two generations.
When you talk about the families, you obviously have to write characters here that are believable, and I think as you just discussed the historical element of it, the hardest part I think for writers that specialize in this kind of writing is putting yourself in the mindset of the individuals as they're coming across, because it is, you know, it's. There's too much, I think, in our modern society we have to shed to get to a point of utter, you know, desperation, to a point almost to say, okay, I've got to turn my back on everything I've known, every person I've known. I've got to go over and hope on the benevolence of America. Talk about that as well, because when you write these characters, they're fairly well fleshed out. They're very, very they're very relatable characters.
Thank you very much. I really hope that comes across to the readers. When you write fiction, of course, you sort of live with these people almost like if they were your neighbors or your family for a while. And I had a hard time saying goodbye to them. You might even realize that when you read the book, because I have a hard time letting go. I follow them all the way up to 2007, I think. I think really this is what we have fiction for. As long as there's been a sort of human civilization, we have told stories and fiction, stories of fiction to each other. Because I think that's the only way that you actually can step into somebody else's shoes and really take part of somebody else's experiences like they were your own, without going crazy, of course. That's also an option. But I think this is what fiction is for, really, to understand that other people's experiences are as real as your own, even if they don't remind you of your own life at all. Mm-hmm. And in fiction, we have this wonderful opportunity to actually try to share the lives of people who lived under very, very different circumstances. And of course, this novel is an experiment to see how close we can get to these people that we know so little about.
How long did it take you, when you start, from the point where you started to flush out the story, how long did it take you to get to where you finished it? I mean, it must have taken you years.
4 years, yeah. Actually. That was four quite wonderful years, I must add. Doing research is actually great fun, and people who think that archives are boring places have never been to one, because all those drawers are full of life, actually, of different lives. And Minnesota History Society is an absolutely wonderful and fascinating place to be in. Mm-hmm. And the research phase, of course, is the happy phase. Then you have to actually write stuff, and that's much harder. But right now, I'm finishing up the next novel, and I've spent 4 years on that one as well. And I actually can tell you, it's really fascinating to sort of step into the writing mode, if I might call it that, because you actually step into another place for mm-hmm. a while. And I don't think that a writer's experience is that different from the reader's experience. If you really get sort of caught up by a good book, you leave time and space behind and sort of enter the story. And that's a wonderful thing when it happens.
And I love how you just said that. I don't want to turn this into a political thing, but
please do.
Well, it is you can't deny the parallels of the lessons you can learn in this book about, you know, and just because the nationality of the immigrant has changed from Swedish to Mexican or Central American, South American, Asian, the reality is it's the same story. And what you know, we romanticize in this country. We do. I mean, to a point. I mean, we romanticize. Oh, they came here and they worked as seamstresses, and they worked in the factories, and they worked on the rail lines, and this, even though that was very hard jobs and stuff like this. But we don't look at the modern immigrant who is doing just the same amount of difficult, hard jobs, painful jobs at times, and yet, you know, doing jobs that most Americans won't do. The reality is this book is a lesson, is that, you know, if we're going to tolerate immigration, in which we have, we need to continue to do so because it makes a more vibrant country.
Actually, when I started out writing this novel, my goal was not to write a piece of allegorical fiction trying to say that, look, these people had exactly the same conditions as people have today or whatever. But down the road, I realized that there were extremely close similarities, and it would be, it would be lying to edit this out. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of followed it. And yeah, you're absolutely right. There are very, very strong similarities, as well as differences, of course. But I just read a few days ago, actually, an extract from a book by Colonel Mattson. He fought for Minnesota in the Civil War, and he worked with the railroad companies when after the war. And he wrote about Swedish immigrants, that they were so unsatisfied all the time. They were always complaining. The railroad companies gave them all kinds of work and even fed them from time to time, according to his book. And they were always complaining because they got just plain sugar when they wanted lump sugar, that sort of thing. And then he ends by saying, well, this is a condition that you can see in all immigration groups. The first 2 years, they are very dissatisfied in a new country, but that wears off in a while. And it was quite funny to read that, because the Swedish story is that the Swedish immigrant was the sort of model immigrant who never complained and just worked their way up in society. And once you get close to history, you realize that was not the case at all.
Yeah, well, and as you just sort of said, I mean, we forget purposely, in my mind, that the Scandinavians were not liked. The Irish were not liked. The Italians were not liked when they first came on over. I mean, the Italians, they went up into northern Minnesota and they started making, you know, food up there. And then all of a sudden everyone loved them. These guys are great. Bring them on in. And it was and I think that that's a lesson we have to learn, is that we learned tolerance then. We can learn tolerance now.
Absolutely. And one of the fascinating aspects of looking into this part of history is to realize that the prejudice that some of the Swedish immigrants faced when they first arrived in large numbers in the 1880s, and people complained about the smell of Swedes, for instance. Do you know what a Swede smells like?
Not really. I dated a few girls, but off the top of my head, yes.
Well, according to one, was a custom official, I think, he complained about the Swedish smell being a mixture of salt, sweat, leather, onions, and herring. Ugh. That's what a Swede smells like. And Swedes were, as you know, they were considered a little bit slow because they had a hard time learning to speak English. They spoke quite bad English for a while, and people made fun of their accents quite a lot. They had to face their own set of prejudice when they arrived. And you can, if you read the St. Paul newspapers that are available online, you can see that in the 1880s, they complain a lot about the Swedes, and they are unhygienic, and they fight a lot, and so on. Mm-hmm. But something mysterious happens in the 1890s. Then the Swedes suddenly are treated much better, at least in the newspapers. They say they are quite slow, but you can hire them. They are good workers. These Italian guys, on the other hand, that has arrived.
Yeah.
You should look out for those guys because they fight with knives. And then when you get up to like 1910 or something like that, they say, well, Italians, you have to remember that they sort of are related to the Romans and their food is fantastic. These are great guys. Whereas these Poles that has arrived, mm-hmm. and so on. So there is like a set of prejudice that you always stick onto the guys who have arrived the latest. Mm-hmm. So you have to work your way out of that.
Sweet Hollow is the book. Ola Larsmo is the author. When you do finish this next book, by all means, come back. I would love to have you back on the air.
And I would love to come back to Minnesota because I'm really fall in love with your state. It's a magnificent and beautiful place.
Well, thank you very much. You're more than welcome anytime to come on back. Ola Larsmo, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.